Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, June 4th, 2011. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. And our headline topic for today is Be a Citizen, Not a Statistic. Now, there are many respects in which this can be discussed. The obvious ones, of course, are statecraft and real science, not just statistical correlations and so forth. And I guess you could say cultural outlook. And the but what we're going to do is inclusive of those things. We're going to have two guests I'll welcome in just a second, and we're going to be discussing where we stand in the battle to stop the policies, the destructive policies that are actually behind having put Obama in the presidency, the kind of monetarism, bailout, speculation, financial destruction, and instead where we stand in shifting to deliberate policies of science and intervention into our planet on behalf of civilization. In fact, our planet, our galaxy, our universe. And that brings up the matter of the necessity of reinstating Glass-Steagall, that 1933 law that worked for decades and has been repealed in fact and in point of law. We need to reinstate it, and it's very urgent. But now, with that in mind, I'm going to turn to introduce our guests. First, we have with us by telephone from Detroit, Bill Roberts. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Marcia.
And Bill, most all of you know, is running for Congress in the state of Michigan. He is active throughout, spends time in Ohio and many other places in the Great Lakes states, the Ohio Valley there, and is leading the charge in the United States with five other co-candidates for Congress who are on the Pacific Atlantic and the Gulf Coasts. And so this national slate is also serving to fly the flag internationally for the kinds of policies for mankind I was just mentioning. And we do have from Europe, we're very glad to have as our guest speaking with us from Wiesbaden, Germany, Claudio Celani. Welcome, Claudio.
Hi, Marcia.
And Claudio is I'm sure, Claudio, you're very Italian. He's going to speak with us a lot about Italy. And
I'll try to hide my accent.
Okay. And I'll say right in at the beginning, in the latest EIR online, the one that was posted this week, I think its cover date will be June 3rd, there is an article by Claudio. I think it's called Volcanoes and Earthquakes, Hot Issues in Italy, and you'll know why, what all that implies in irony and in fact in just a moment. But what I want to do is to start with Bill, because when it comes to the urgency, the fact that we can't wait around for shifting direction in the United States, Bill, why don't you open by saying you've been on you're campaigning 25 hours a day, but will you please address this? Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are at this moment leading a fight. The six LaRouche Democrat candidates are leading the fight in the population to dump Obama and to immediately muster the support for ramming through the House Resolution 1489 to restore the Glass-Steagall policy. And this, of course, is Lyndon LaRouche has made the point that this policy that we should have it. We have a deadline of July the 3rd as this is the proper period to conceptualize ramming this policy through. And we have to have that sense of readiness in terms of our networks to be vigilant and ready to wage the type of fight that's needed, and not to have some idea that, well, Glass-Steagall is good, it's a good idea, it's needed, but we have to wait and kind of see where, if people are going to be ready for this radical shift. And this is something that we've been, the six campaigns have reported, especially in particular from this last week, as you've seen if you're following the LaRouche PAC website and you've gotten Harley Schlanger's update on some of the institutional moves, there's a significant shift among the institutions for Glass-Steagall. We're seeing more co-sponsors. I think there's something somewhere in the range of 14 co-sponsors in the Congress for restoring Glass-Steagall and repealing Gramm-Leach-Bliley. And this is, you know, for Marcy Kaptur's bill to return to the Glass-Steagall standard of banking. It's a significant list of names. It's not just 14 people. It reflects the ongoing work in the various areas to burn the tail feathers of the Congress to move immediately on this policy. We've seen an endorsement by the Machinists Union, the National Farm Bureau, and if we look at the editorials and so forth coming forth, various bankers now coming out and calling for a restoring of Glass-Steagall, there is significant institutional motion for pushing this policy through because there's a sense that it is life or death. The deep cuts in the state budgets that threaten people's lives, the coming meltdown of the Eurozone, which could happen at the minute that Greece or Portugal or Ireland default on their debt, all these things are combining to add to the pressure and the sense of urgency of pushing through this policy immediately. And in addition to that institutional acceleration, what I can report from the campaigns is that in particular in the last week, we're getting much more of a sense of urgency in the field, in the population, to the idea that when we're telling people, look, forget about your 2012 election, forget about your stupid candidates that you want to run against Obama, who all suck. Forget about your idea of clock time. We don't have time for your clock time, and that's not a real time scale for dealing with this. Become someone who's thinking in real physical time and act now to force the fight on the positive policy solution. And especially when we tell people about Obama's speech in Joplin, Missouri, where he essentially went to Missouri and said there's nothing we can do about these extreme weather events. There's nothing we can do about these tornadoes that are destroying entire towns. We can only pray for people and respond after they happen. Well, and then when we make the point that this very same administration, this very same president, is making these remarks after knowingly having shut down over 50% of the weather satellites that we use to forecast these natural disasters and get people out of harm's way, it's very clear that we have a president that is murdering the population, that either he is insane, in which case that he has to be removed by the 25th Amendment, or he is criminally negligent and should be impeached. But either way, there's no room for sitting around and saying, yes, well, there's a democratic process and we'll vote him out. But that people have to join us in acting now, not forever sticking their toe in the water and testing the temperature, but joining the fight of the six candidates now to prevent the further destruction of human life. And that's what it means to be a patriot right now. So we're in the various campaign locals, we're pushing on that end of things. Rachel Brown in Massachusetts right now is at the Democratic, the state Democratic convention, where they're pushing two resolutions: one for the removal of Obama with the 25th Amendment, and another for restoring Glass-Steagall. So we'll have some more on that, but there's a significant motion on the ground right now.
Yeah, I hear that's today, right?
Right.
Bill, she's actually... Right, that's... Well, let me ask you, Bill. I think maybe we go to Europe because, Claudio, you were mentioning about giving some sense of the latest from Greece, the upheaval in the streets, the mass actions, the reality that has, the potential, the youth factor. Could you go into that right now?
Yes, yeah, sure. I was thinking about the parallels between the situation in the United States, which requires Glass-Steagall right now, and what's going on in Europe in this moment. I think if Americans look at Europe now, they could draw a lesson on why Glass-Steagall is so urgent, because whatever you, whatever budget cut policy you implement, it's not going to work, and it's going to be worse afterwards than before. And you can see this very clearly in the case of the Eurozone crisis, and especially in the sharpest crisis of the Eurozone, which is Greece. Greece is being destroyed now as a nation economically and politically, and despite all they do in cutting the budget, it's not going to work. The facts are that last year, exactly 1 year ago in May, the Eurozone countries got together to rescue Greece from a default, not because they love the Greek people, but because they want to save their banks. It's French banks, British banks, German banks who own Greek government bonds. And Greece had issued those bonds to finance already the bailout of the banks. So the European Union, in order to save those Eurozone banks, has demanded from Greece that they accept a deadly refinancing scheme by which they get 110 billion. This was last year. In exchange for massive austerity policies, budget cuts, exactly those budget cuts which President Obama and his backers in the Democratic and the Republican Party are pushing right now. So 1 year after that, Greece is more bankrupt than before. So Greece is now asking not only for that money which had been promised, but for 80 billion more within the next month. Otherwise, Greece will be insolvent. And why? Because the budget cuts have produced exactly what every healthy mind can imagine. You cut the budget, you cut employment, you eliminate people who produce, or even people who just consume. These are people who consume something which others produce. So the economy went into a deep recession, and the government earning tax earnings collapsed. So and what they are is the European Union doing now? They are demanding suicide from the Greek population, and the government prime minister of Greece has announced today that he will accept basically a commissioning of his government by the European Union, that is commissaris. Or commissioners, you know, imagine the European Union like the Soviet state, when you have commissioners going there and running other countries, and that's what's going to happen. And in order to implement a much, you know, an even greater austerity program. Now, the people, the population in Greece is not accepting this. The population is in a total revolt, and therefore, even the possibility that this plan is supported by the parliament in the next weeks is at this point a big question mark. Following the example of the Greek youth, which, as you might know, started a mass strike mobilization by occupying major squares in the larger cities in Spain, the Greek youth has started to do the same in the last days, and they are occupying for example, the Parliament Square in Athens, the Syntagma Square, And they do this, you know, with a very colorful protest. They sit there and they have built three gallows for the Troika, which is the three members of the European Union delegation. One is the European Commissioner, the other one is the ECB, and the third one is the IMF. The IMF is not European Union, but it's the Troika. It's called the Troika. We call it the Junta, to compare it to the fascist military junta in the 60s in Greece. So this mobilization is every day taking place. And one correspondent of ours who is in Greece, we spoke to him yesterday, he said that every evening goes there. He's not a youth, so he's in my age, and he goes there every evening to see how it looks like, to have a feeling. And he told us that he has to get out of the subway three stations afterwards, after the main square, because it's not possible because of the multitude, which is
congestion.
Yes, the congestion. So he has to get out three stations later and then walk back. So it's an enormous uprise of the population. And they have sieged the parliament. The first evening, the police had to surround the parliament, and they did it with cars in order to protect the members of the parliament, you know. So that's a political situation. It's explosive, and therefore it's a big question mark. So the two lessons are, your austerity programs to bail out banks don't work. And the second is, you're going to be politically smashed.
Right. Well, Bill, let's go back to you, because in recent months you've been you've had video reports on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website from Columbus, Ohio, the capital there, from Lansing, Michigan, the capital there, where there were uprisings in the inside and outside the capital chambers, much of which you reported were from youth. Not just from organized labor and others who are protesting too. And so a whole kind of shift was going on. And if you want to talk about this process more, to let people know. And the second thing is also, I think you were a point that Linda LaRouche has been making. He made it this morning, I understand, to associates when he had a weekly staff meeting. He said, you know, it isn't just prompting or egging on or something, people. The idea, but people are moving based on ideas that something can change. And you, in particular, have been putting forward in this kind of formerly industrialized capital of the world, the idea of North American water and power lines, or the idea of repairing these aged locks and dams and structures that would have flood control and earthquake response and so forth and so on. I'd like you to talk about that. One thing I will say, I thank Fred Hunefeld. He was on here recently. He's down in Louisiana in the lower Mississippi flood region, and he just sent you an email, Bill, where he was, in passing, you were referring to the machinists, to the National Farmers Union. You might have said National Farmers Bureau, so he thought maybe the Farm Bureau also endorsed Glass-Steagall. I know many local individuals have, but not the American Farm Bureau, but it's the National Farmers Union, Fred.
Right.
Thanks.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's I'm glad he mentioned that. Everything we know is on a special page, right, Bill, of the LaRouche Political Action Committee.
Right.
But why don't you go ahead about this process of change?
Okay. Yeah, we're seeing right now, I think, the much of what was building as far as a mass strike process in the States, where you had these awful governors elected, is now mostly focused, in terms of a visible motion, is focused around recalling these governors. And in Wisconsin, a number of the legislators who went along with these union busting and sort of emergency financial managers being imposed on the municipalities. And actually, it's exactly the same thing as Claudia was talking about with these commissioners being essentially appointed over the authority of the nations. In the case of Michigan, the basis, most of the anger and motion around recalling the governor here is people realize that this law that's been created by this governor to impose emergency financial managers is a fascist, that it's a fascist policy. But the larger conception that we've got to really get across, which gets to the conception of NWAPA, which gets to the idea of the type of infrastructure that needs to be built now, and really on a much higher platform than ever before, by the Army Corps of Engineers to be able to deal with flood control, to actually have the level of productivity and energy flux density in the economy to be able to deal with the increasing unfriendliness of our universe that we live in, this corner of the galaxy in particular, is the idea of a credit system. And this is where Glass-Steagall provides a kind of point of optimism around which we've really got to get the population to understand this concept of Glass-Steagall from the highest level. That this is not a simple banking reform. This is not something that they can just sort of fit into their pleasure pain calculation.
You mean things will be a little bit more pleasurable and a little less painful?
Right, a little less pain. If Glass-Steagall will get me a little less pain, then I'll fight for it. Oh, until someone yells at me because they don't like LaRouche or they don't like Franklin Roosevelt,
right. and then
that's too much pain, and I'll stop fighting for it. But that's not going to work. And I think that's why right now the way we've got to be mobilizing our contact bases to fight for Glass-Steagall this month is with the material that's on our website, because it's only from the highest standpoint of what this fight really is, which is a break from the cultural pessimism of, you know, the belief in science, of statistics, the sort of political pessimism that is expressed down to the local level of just your common citizen who believes that all they can do is vote for, you know, someone among the peanut gallery who says they're against one of the things that has caused them the most pain from the Obama administration or this Congress or what have you. But we have to catalyze a shift right now in the population toward the conception that I think LaRouche has been raising a lot, that there has to be a sense of how a future state that we're going to conceptualize creating, not from extrapolating some process that's going on now, but having a totally new idea that we shape a political fight around, that conception of the future has to sort of be shaping everything that we do right now, and even in every way. That conception of a credit system has to be minimally what is in mind as people are going out and fighting for Glass-Steagall.
Well, one thing, Bill, what you say, and those parallels you drew are very dramatic and clear between the uprising in Greece against this fascist commissar system, or the Lansing, Michigan commissars coming into Michigan towns and telling them to shut down. But on the positive side, Claudio, you wanted to talk about the fight for nuclear power in Europe as against this insane announcement we've seen in the last 10 days by the German government of phasing it out, because this gets to the ideas Bill was mentioning of really increasing the economic organization of mankind. We have to have nuclear power and all it implies.
Yeah, we had we had an exchange on this issue with the Chancellor of Germany yesterday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Our correspondent, Stefan Ossenkopf, had the possibility to ask her a question at the press conference in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is very, very interesting because what he is asking his question, he posed exactly the question of the kind of energy that humanity needs in order to go forward, and this must be a high-density source of energy. And he said, Mr. Merkel, you are a physicist, and you should know this. And she's a physicist, that's true, so she should know this. And then he asked her why, if she should know this, why is she making a shift, a radical shift against nuclear energy? As you might know, Germany decided to abandon or to shut down progressively all of its nuclear reactors and by 2021, I think. So it's 17 of them, 7 are already shut down. This was supposed to be temporary because of their age, but the government announced that they will be kept shut, and in addition, the 10 other reactors will be shut down one after the other. So why has she done such a radical shift? And Stefan Ossenkopf asked her whether the real intention behind this shift is deindustrialization.
Mm-hmm.
Quoting from the, referring to the report of the government commission that is responsible for this shift. This is a commission headed by a guy called Schellnhuber, who is a German who leads in a climate research institute in Potsdam, but he has also been for 10 years at the East Anglia University in Britain. That's where the scandal broke out, where they were manipulating the opinions of good scientists in order to suppress the evidence against climate change. So this guy pursues the industrialization, and when Stefan asked this, you have to watch the video and see what Merkel's face was.
Uh-huh.
And the way she answered saying that they are not against industrialization, and she brought some few stupid arguments in order to support their answer. But more than the words was the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Significant. And you have to really watch the video because the tone of the Chancellor of Germany shifted totally. She was totally upbeat before, and then this was the last question. Then it became totally different, totally defensive, and therefore the tone betrays the truth more than the words, and she said. And after her, also another minister had to say something to deny that Germany is going towards industrialization, and after him also another woman had to say the same thing. So we caught them in flagrante, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are leading this fight because this was a coup and took everybody by surprise in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
After the Fukushima events, the media had a brainwashing campaign in Germany and in Europe. It was tremendous. I don't give you the details, but, you know, you can imagine how, under this campaign, it's easy to understand how the people was brainwashed, totally scared. And the government made this decision without consulting any sector of the society, without a discussion in the parliament, without a debate in the political parties, you know, just an announcement like a coup. So everybody was shocked, and the resistance was caught by surprise. Merkel announced that she wants this through as a bill, as a legislation, as an act of the parliament by July 17th. So Helga Zepp-LaRouche has declared this day a day of resistance against the new fascism, and we are fighting in order to sabotage this decision. Now, the resistance is organizing itself slowly after this shock. And I can, you know, you can imagine that, you know, people here have to meet, have to discuss, and then they have to, you know, to find the way how to react. So some opposition has come out with public statements, like sectors of the industry and also sectors in the media. And one remarkable piece was today in the newspaper Die Welt, in the online in the online version of Die Welt. Die Welt is an established liberal newspaper in Germany, one of the most widespread newspaper, and there was today a piece saying that Mrs. Merkel's pro-green environmental shift has been influenced by the philosophy of Martin Heidegger.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say it's a shift done in that direction, and Heidegger would applaud today, because Heidegger was a guy who basically wanted to go back to nature and was hostile to any... He was hostile to technology in general as changing the nature of man to the wars. And Die Welt says, well, Heidegger was a total Nazi. He was a total supporter, a card-carrying member of the Nazi party.
Okay.
And so this is a very good article and a very good blow. Now, Germany has been sort of isolated in this. At the last European summit in France, everybody went to Frau Merkel and asked her how could Germany do this, and the French especially. And a couple of days ago, there was also another very significant reaction from Russia on Pravda.
Uh-huh.
Pravda said that Pravda published an article saying that Germany is not only taking an irrational decision to go out of nuclear energy, therefore endangering its energy security, but Germany is pushing other nations to do this. And therefore we are watching very worried the whole German-speaking area of Europe going towards an irrational policy. Now, saying this from a Russian standpoint, right, it has some historical overtones. So this is very important. Now, there are less positive developments in Italy, because the green fascists in Italy have managed to organize a referendum for June 12th, so in 1 week, basically. And they, despite the fact that the government has decided to suspend the law for the nuclear program in Italy, they managed to have the court backing their decision, the referendum decision. So it's a fight. The government went into appeal to the Constitutional Court. I don't know whether they will be successful, but if the referendum takes place, the population is in a psychotic state, has been brainwashed, and if they get a quorum, which is a minimal participation of voters, then I'm afraid that this will be an overwhelming vote against nuclear power. Which, you know, politically you can ignore it, but it's indicative of the state of the population, which we have to change, and the responsibility for this state is the mass media and the politicians. Now, the good news is that there are a few scientists, leaders, who call this irrationality by name, this insanity by name, and one instance is a well-known physicist and astrophysicist whose name is Margherita Hack, who pointed to the fact that Italians should be worried not about nuclear energy, but about a much greater risk, which is Mount Vesuvius, which is the most dangerous volcanoes on Earth, because there are 3 million people living around it, literally on the slopes of Mount Vesuvio. And this volcano has exploded with terrific effects already in the past, And there are two of these large explosions, which are called Plinian eruptions. Plinian from the name of the Roman historian or scientist, Pliny, right? Pliny
mm-hmm.
the Younger,
yes. mm-hmm.
who watched one of these eruptions, the famous 79 AD eruption that destroyed Pompeii and Herculaneum.
Mm-hmm.
And now, this happened 2,000 years ago. But 2,000 years earlier, in about 1800 BC, you know, these dates are approximate, but it's about 2,000 years before the Plinian eruption, there was another one, even bigger, or anyway at the same dimension. So, if you know, if you look at the cycles, then, you know, 2,000 years have already passed since the last of such eruptions, and therefore scientists are calling for taking care of this risk by drafting an adequate evacuation plan and relocation plan. And I've interviewed one of these scientists, Mrs. Pappalardo, who is studying this, and I interviewed her for my EIR article, so our listeners can go to our website and read it. And there was another issue I wanted to talk. May I suggest it?
Yes, go right ahead. And if Bill has any further thoughts to bring out about it, he can ask you also. Go ahead.
No, I mean, because I don't want that this is not mentioned and we run out of time. But since we are in Italy, you know, there's been a decision last week, you know, which involves government responsibility in front of natural risks and natural catastrophes.
Yeah, let me tell you, I'll tell our listeners in advance, that's highly important. And Bill may want to comment because he said about Obama in Joplin, Missouri last Sunday on the 29th, saying, you can't know, you can't be responsible, I don't care. You know, this couldn't be more apt for the world leadership situation right now. Please go ahead.
Right. Now, what happened in Italy was that last week, a court in the city of L'Aquila has indicted all the members of a government commission on major risks, which is a commission that was set up to take care, study, and warn and protect the population, especially protect the population, after and in advance of great natural disasters. And in Italy, great natural disasters are earthquakes. You know, we have a major earthquake every second year, and we have minor earthquakes every day. So in L'Aquila, there was in 2009 a major earthquake of I think of the 6.3 grade on the scale, which didn't make many victims. I mean, one victim is already too much, but there were 300 victims, but it destroyed the whole center of this city, L'Aquila, which is an historical city with churches and buildings which are as old as the Roman period. And so the court indicted the commission because 1 week before the earthquake, the commission met on the basis of precursor signals. That is, there were seismic waves. Now, when there are seismic waves, you don't have necessarily a big earthquake at the end, but sometimes you can have it. You can have it historically. You know there are several cases. I don't say many, but there are some cases when after a seismic wave you have a major earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this commission did, they said instead they issued a release. So they did an act of government decision by issuing a release to the population in L'Aquila and surroundings, saying that this was a seismic wave, which is normal, which is very frequent in Italy. It happens every day, and there is very low probability that there would be a major earthquake. Now, this was a serious act of irresponsibility. This was a forecast. This was a real forecast that there would be no earthquake. and where there was no basis for doing for issuing such a forecast. Now, you have to think that this commission is composed by government official who is responsible for the civil protection, I would say, the equivalent of the National Guard in the United States.
Yeah, right, Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Homeland Security, and seven and six geologists. And these geologists, including the head of the Seismic Society, he insists publicly that you cannot forecast earthquakes. Mm-hmm. Now, these people who claim that you cannot forecast earthquakes issued a forecast. And as a consequence of this forecast, there was no action done, you know, to protect the population.
To be on standby, you mean like contingency measures.
Yeah, you don't need to evacuate the population. Actually, as a matter of fact, if buildings, houses are built properly, nobody's going to be killed by an earthquake. Mm-hmm. But we know that in such old cities like L'Aquila, there are many endangered buildings, and there are also unfortunately, some modern buildings which are have not been built properly. One of these was the student house where students were living, and my friend Professor Biagi, who is a researcher on earthquake precursors, and who believes that we can one day, soon maybe, forecast earthquakes. We can solve the problem of earthquake forecasting. He said he was there the day before and he saw this building from the outside, and you could tell it from the outside that this building was at risk. So everything the commission had to do was to send some technicians to L'Aquila, two people, and have a one-day review of the buildings, public buildings, hospitals, etc., and then condemned the buildings at risk. And they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. So the court has indicted this government body, and there will be a trial in September. Uh-huh. Now, there was a big uproar in the media. I read in the international media that this NIC, I must say, I was appalled. I was appalled to the extent the media has published the travesty of the story, because what you read in the media, including American newspapers, is that leading scientists of Italy have been indicted because they say that you cannot forecast earthquakes. That's a travesty. So they have turned the story around. Mm-hmm. And I have read articles which have been commented by readers, and all the readers, I found 50 to 100 comments, all the readers fall into this trap and write, we have again in Italy a trial against Galileo. Mm-hmm. Or they compare this to, you know, there's this movie, Hollywood movie in the United States on the story of Amanda Knox, girl who was sentenced in Perugia for murder.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is another brainwashed operation, but they make a parallel with this.
A witch hunt.
A witch hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, as if, you know, the Italian justice system was a medieval justice system. Mm-hmm. And this is what you read in the media. It's a total travesty. And therefore, we should break through this thing. It's a very important thing that this is done, because it's not a trial against science. Courts should not interfere in the scientific debate among scientists on the science of earthquakes and precursors and forecasting. You know? Mm-hmm. This must be a scientific debate. Mm-hmm. But here we have a government responsibility.
Right.
A government action of a forecast saying that there would be no earthquake, and this is intolerable.
Right. Do you want to say...
This is the parallel to President Obama, I think, that Bill wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. And it's worth making the point, too, that this week, 3 days ago, was the return of the final Endeavour flight, the space shuttle.
Right.
Unless, of course, we dump Obama and bring back the space shuttle and renew our commitment to manned spaceflight. But this is slated as the final flight. And of course, I think the larger point to be made is that, you know, this Obama is a puppet. This is the action, what you're seeing when you talk about the WBGU and the way in which they're acting to, you know, twist the arms of first Germany and then other nations to cave into a popular sentiment that they're cultivating, that nuclear power is somehow too complicated, that, you know, we saw what happened in Japan, and therefore why don't we go to sustainable energy that's not as complicated, and we really have to just be thinking more practical on these things. Or when you're talking about the scientists that are sabotaging the science of forecasting, in all three cases, Obama, the puppet of the British monarchy, WBGU, the puppet of the British monarchy, and these scientists, what you're looking at in all three cases is you can really see the evil of this system of monetarism, the pure evil that says that all you have to worry about, that we cannot be worried about things that we can't see. We can't be overly concerned with putting all this money into space. Nuclear power is just too complicated, right? And it plays on that backwardness in the population of sense certainty. So, and it's an attack directly on that's coming right now because the financial system is breaking down. It's an attack specifically on the power that humanity has to act to change our circumstances. And some of these things are more deadly than others, but I think when you talk about the shutting down of NASA, the shutting down of nuclear power, in the context of what the basement research team has clearly established as in the realm of likelihood that we're in a period, humanity is in a period after existing now for maybe 2.5 million years on this planet, where the question of the survival of our species is going to be determined by our ability to discover things that we have not yet discovered, that we haven't even asked the questions yet, that we have to get out into space, we have to go into the microphysical, into the astronomical, more so to even be able to ask the type of questions which will pose generate the discoveries that are required for mankind to be able to deal with this ever more dangerous environment that we're going into as a result of changes in the galaxy. I think the additional point to make is that what we don't know will kill us. And this is fundamentally why a monetary system doesn't work, along with all the other reasons, but humanity is not a creature that's based on sense certainty. And to the degree that we have a population that still believes in sense certainty, we're forced with having to take on these fights sort of one by one, which mankind should have already gotten beyond. We should have already gotten beyond the type of backwardness which would even allow for a discussion coming from governments that we should shut down nuclear power.
Right. Do you want to say more, Claudio, about your friend Dr. Biaggi, who people can see interviewed if you go on LaRouchePack.com and look at browse through some of the relevant pages among the scientists? He was interviewed in Vienna, right, at the International Geophysics Society. But the thing is, I understand you and Dr. Biaggi, who's the astrophysicist or the earthquake precursor specialist. He's
a physicist and a geologist.
A geologist. But he was saying, take contingency measures. You don't know if it's for sure. But of course, the monitress, as Bill would say, this costs too much. You can't do it. You can't say it. You have to. I mean, that's one crass way to look at the motivation behind the evil, behind the Schellnhuber genocidal environmentalists. They wouldn't want you to say science is, we should proceed on the highest level of science. They say it costs too much, right?
Right. No, that's very evident in this field of research, of scientific research, but it's evident in all other sectors. I mean, Professor Biagi had to go himself personally to a local saving bank to borrow €100,000 to finance his program.
For research. Uh-huh.
Research program. And he has a research program based on electromagnetic precursors on the surface of the Earth. And he coordinates this internationally with Russians and Japanese scientists. And he doesn't have his own, mostly of the data he gets are not from his own stations, but from stations which have been built already and are all over the places, which are there for other reasons. But he has access to those data, and he reads them from his standpoint of a researcher on earthquake precursors. So he told me last month, before he went to Vienna, he told me that 10 days before the earthquake in Japan, there was a very clear precursor which he could see from the data sent by Japanese scientists who were investigating on a totally different thing. They were investigating on neutrinos.
Okay.
Right? But their station had GPS data, global position system data, which indicated a sudden drop of the level of the surface in a region close to the epicenter of the earthquake of 3 meters.
Hmm.
And nobody cared about it because they were not looking for this, but Biagi, when he received this, he saw this, and he told me that if we had a system of government bodies which are coordinated, then they could be put in the position of using those data. And of course, you need more parameters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even this very important, very clear precursor would not be enough to establish, with a high probability, let's say 80% probability minimum, a major earthquake event. Mm. And therefore, Biagi and the other scientists who met at this session in Vienna, like the Russian Pulinets and others, they are calling for a multi-parameter approach. Multi-parameter means you have one parameter being this, you know, GPS data, but then you have electromagnetic activity on the Earth's surface, from the Earth, electromagnetic activity in the atmosphere, in the ionosphere, and beyond. And, for example, radon emission. Now, radon is a gas which is associated with earthquake events. But if you have an earthquake wave, which is not an event, you have also emission of radon. So radon alone is not enough. There was one complication in the L'Aquila earthquake. I mentioned this here because you might read this also in the press, and you might read it in a manipulative way. There was one guy whose name is Giuliani, who is a researcher on radon, who the day before the earthquake in L'Aquila went to all TVs and media announcing an earthquake because he had had collected a radon precursor activity, so major emissions of radon. Now, the earthquake took place, but he had indicated another town, which is 100 kilometers south, and had people been removed from this town, they would have been brought to L'Aquila.
So
things would be worse. So
the single issue parameter can certainly also be equally dangerous.
Yes, exactly. And then you need a responsible government body. You can't have scientists going around, running around like, you know, like chicken without head, screaming
right.
and spreading panic. So, but, you know, the same, these researches are totally underfunded, or I would say zero funded. And that's because governments are bailing out banks instead of financing programs, and they are cutting vital programs. Now there are even more urgent programs, I would say, in the health sector. And we have an epidemic which has broken out in Germany now, right now, which shows how inadequate is the health system as a result of cuts in the health sector in front of such epidemics. I'm referring to the E. coli bacteria epidemics. I don't know if I pronounce correctly the name.
Yeah, that's what we always call it, E. coli, but it's
E. coli,
the bacteria outbreak that's claimed 1,700 or at least that many cases, right?
Well, they say officially are 2,000 infected, but they might be the double.
Yes,
4,000. Mm-hmm. Especially they are concentrated. Most of these people are in the city of Hamburg,
mm-hmm.
and Hamburg is the port of Germany. The port of Germany. It's called Das Tor zur Welt, the door to the world. So historically, people in Germany have been always prepared and ready in Hamburg to face epidemics coming from the outside. And they have an institute, a very efficient institute of research there. Now, they are overwhelmed now. Hospitals in Hamburg are overwhelmed because this bacteria is destroying blood cells. So you need a lot of blood. They don't have enough for the patients. And the bacteria also, in the second phase, attacks kidneys. And you need to put all these people on kidneys.
Machines. Dialysis. Uh-huh.
And you don't have enough. They're getting machines from throughout Germany. Now, what happens if they don't control this epidemics? And that's the key scientific issue because, you know, since they cut the programs, then they invent the lie that epidemics have been defeated. But, by cutting programs, by implementing austerity throughout the world, they are generating the conditions of an ecological holocaust in the sense. We used this word, ecological holocaust, 35 years ago, we in the LaRouche organization, when the Greens didn't exist yet, and ecology was an honest word.
Right. You know? Well, we're reaching the close where we only have 2 minutes left, but I think you pointed up what Bill was saying before, in the largest sense, in the immediate sense, we're especially challenging everyone listening right now on what it means to be a patriot to take action in statecraft and in science, that we have to have this Glass-Steagall credit system. Do you want to close out, Bill, with again stressing to people the urgency, or even in terms of disaster relief, which Obama has snubbed his nose out, let alone the level of civilization in an unfriendly galaxy right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think Claudio mentioned a very important point, which is that not only do you have to have the science, the competence in terms of the science of forecasting in place to save lives, but you actually have to have a government that's committed to saving lives. And that's not something we have with Obama. We have a president who is opposed, whether he thinks about it in these terms or not, I'm not even so sure that he has the mental competence to be so conscious of his own thinking habits. But with Obama, we do not have a president that's committed to the preamble of the Constitution. And so this is why Obama needs to be out. With the 25th Amendment, is the quickest way. There's no compromise with you can't compromise and reform things with Obama still in there. And this is something that is increasingly becoming clear to those who we're speaking with that you can't separate the fight for Glass-Steagall from the fight to remove Obama. And in fact, Rachel Brown reported from Boston that at the convention, they're, even though they have two different petitions and two different resolutions, one to remove Obama with the 25th Amendment and another calling for the restoration of Glass-Steagall, when they're asking people to sign the resolution for Glass-Steagall, they're getting responses like, yeah, let's get rid of Obama, or no, I'm not going to sign that because I'm with Obama.
Uh-huh.
And so it is it's the same fight right now, and we're getting the recognition of that more and more with physicians that we're meeting in the field are becoming much more clear on how Obamacare in particular is going to have people dying in the streets very soon. So this is, it's the same fight, and that's what the fight is. It's removing Obama needs to be put at the forefront of everything else we're doing.
Okay, well, that is where to, with that call to action, we'll close June 4th, 2011, LaRue Show. And I thank from Europe Claudio Celani from Germany, from Italy, and from Greece, from the Eurozone, soon to be something else, right, Claudio, something better. And I definitely thank Bill Roberts for taking the time from Detroit, from his campaigning. And this is Marcia Mary Baker. Please listen next week. Thank you.